Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everyone, to Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. As we chat on this Wednesday, this is going to be a quick episode reacting to the news of the day in NBA circles, which is an excellent future story from Chris Haynes of ESPN on Andre Iguodala's free agency back on July 1st. Lasted less than 24 hours, but was very eventful. First meeting with the Spurs and Kings, then the Rockets, then ultimately almost signing with the Rockets before going back to Golden State in a deal that was announced that Saturday night. Again, all within the first 24 hours of free agency. But it's a very interesting story for basketball diehards like us, because it's not just the superficial, okay, here are the teams that he looked at and here's what they might look like with him on the team. No, it goes in depth about the actual free agency process, an incredible amount of detail about the meetings. And I know if you're like me, that's one of those things you can't get enough of. If you're not one of the people lucky enough to actually be in those meetings, you can only imagine, because of course, by nature, everything has to be secretive. And this is one of the best looks that I've ever seen in terms of the actual NBA free agency courtship process once the clock starts to July 1st. And the best part about this story, not only is it just about NBA free agency, it directly involves the Rockets, and best of all, it paints them in a very, very flattering light. So that's what I'm going to concentrate here on in this podcast, is looking back at that Andre Iguodala period. I know he ultimately stayed with the Warriors, did not sign with the Rockets, but I think there's a lot of anecdotes in this story from Chris Haynes of ESPN that are very interesting about the Rockets. And if you haven't read the story, again, please do, ESPN.com, or you can look at my Twitter timeline at Ben Dubose. I retweeted it, or go to Chris Haynes' Twitter. It's pretty easy to find. But what I want to focus on here, the Rockets, they had their meeting, and they actually arrived an hour early, on the morning of July 1st. I believe Andre at this point had already met with the Spurs and the Kings, and he had a good idea of what the Warriors were offering, but it wasn't really like he needed to meet with the Warriors because he's been there for years. In fact, he's won two world titles there. So I think with the Warriors, it was always about the dollars and cents. It's not like he needed to be convinced of anything from a basketball perspective. But it discusses his meeting with the Rockets, and the folks in the meeting, as you might imagine, Daryl Morey, Tad Brown, also Coach Mike D'Antoni, then owner Les Alexander, and assistant GM Gerson Rosas. So the Rockets, they made their typical pitch in which they said they could beat the Warriors with Iguodala on the team. They detailed the benefits of low cost of living in Texas, the lack of a state income tax, yada yada, that we always hear. D'Antoni discussed the NBA's new brand of basketball and how his vision of pushing the pace could benefit Iguodala, who's obviously a very athletic guy. He emphasized improving defensively, highlighting a foursome of Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, Ariza, and Iguodala as a switch-everything recipe to cover every offense, which certainly that's great on paper. I have some doubts as to whether it would have actually played out that way. I'll explain that in a minute. But the really interesting thing, it says Iguodala was impressed, soaked it all in, but what really grabbed his attention was what happened next. Morey's phone began to ring, and surprisingly, he answered. It was James Harden, who was unaware that the meeting was happening at the time, and Harden apologized to Morey for interrupting, and Morey said, "That's okay. I'll always answer for you," obviously. And then Harden then asked Morey to hand Iguodala the phone, and says Harden didn't even attempt a recruiting pitch, but just expressed his regret for intervening and wished Iguodala good luck with the process before hanging up. And then the meeting resumed. But here's the real takeaway with this. The meeting went on as usual until newly acquired Rockets point guard Chris Paul stormed into the suite and took over the presentation. Iguodala, his agent, and his representation were stunned. And Paul, at this time, had only been a Rocket for 4 days, but he raved about the closeness of the team and the transparency within the organization for about 20 minutes, according to the Chris Haynes story. He revealed that the franchise's openness was something he has never experienced in the NBA. Iguodala was captivated. Folks, I've said it before, and I don't know how many times I'm going to have to say it throughout this season. Chris Paul picked the Rockets not just for one season. I understand that technically he is on a one-year contract. That is a mere technicality. The fact is, Chris Paul looked at this as a long-term, basically a career decision with him being 32 years old. The only reason Chris Paul is on a one-year contract is because it was advantageous to both the Rockets and him personally from a financial perspective. For the Rockets, Chris Paul opting in to the last year of his contract was about, it allowed them to stay over the cap, which gave them the full mid-level exception, which they used to sign PJ Tucker and Joe Chi. They also were able to offer it in that meeting, at least briefly, to Andre Iguodala, but it gave them more free agency options. Also, from a team-building standpoint, it's about $10 million less in terms of overall cap figure, so that did not push the Rockets all the way to the hard cap or the luxury tax line, which gives them more flexibility to pursue Carmelo Anthony, which, as far as I know, is still going on. So there were reasons for the Rockets to have Chris Paul to opt in, and for Chris in particular, because of the age 38 rule, him opting in was the only way he could get a $200 million max extension from a team other than the LA Clippers. Because if he signed anywhere else, even for 1 year, he wouldn't have the bird rights to go with that. So really, it was opting in for 1 year was the only real route for him to get to. Well, I'll walk back what I said a minute ago. I'm not sure if he signed a 1 year there. I'm not sure if he would have had full bird at that point. I can't say for 100% he would not have. But even if that were the case, then by virtue of him signing a one-year deal somewhere, if that were in Houston, then the Rockets would have to go under the cap to make that happen. So Chris signing a one-year deal was the only way to make it work in terms of math. He would be 33 next summer, and he would still be eligible for that five-year, $200 million extension. That was the only way it could work. And then you add in opting in, that happens before free agency, so it also gives the Rockets the added benefit of staying above the cap, getting their full exceptions, and not being pushed all the way to the luxury tax / hard cap limits. So it benefited both sides to do this one-year arrangement, because if Chris wanted to leave LA, there was only one way he could still get that $200 million max contract, and that's by basically getting it next summer instead of this summer, because no one could give it to him this summer other than his original team, which in this case was the Clippers. If he wanted to get that somewhere else, he would basically need to shift what his existing team was. And so now his existing team with the Rockets, and so now he has the option to get that $200 million contract, albeit next year instead of this year. So it made sense for Chris financially, and for the Rockets, as I explained, it made sense from a team building standpoint to do that deal. But despite those factors, there's a lot of folks in the national media, and keep in mind, the national media never bought the Rockets as a serious Paul contender anyway. If you go back to even June, the popular logic was either staying with the Clippers for the money or going to the Spurs. There was always this superficial just silliness of, well, Chris Paul and James Harden both like the ball. How would that ever work? And of course, as I've said many of times, I don't buy that at all. LeBron James and Dwayne Wade made it work. Kevin Durant and Stephen Curry have made it work. Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant, along with James Harden, by the way, made it work. It's funny how every U.S. Olympic team somehow makes it work. If the players like each other and want to make it work, they'll find a way. But there was this superficial narrative throughout May, throughout June, that the Rockets weren't really to be taken seriously in the Chris Paul chase. It was just the classic Daryl Morey reaching for any big fish, but there wasn't a real fit there. And so after it happened, a lot of those same media members being so stunned, a lot have seemed to convince themselves that, oh, it's just a one-year trial balloon. And if it doesn't happen, then Chris Paul can go somewhere else. We've seen all these banana boat flirtations and, you know, ideas thrown out that, oh, they could get together in LA or Cleveland or anywhere else for Chris, LeBron, Carmelo, Dwayne Wade, those four, again, banana boat guys to get together. No, the reality, I know it's a boring story, but Chris Paul chose Houston, not just now, but for the rest of his career. And this meeting with Andre Iguodala, this story on that from Chris Haynes of ESPN, that proves it more than ever. The thing about Chris Paul, and I have said this over and over and over again, he is a control freak unlike almost anyone basketball fans have ever seen. You see it on the court, and you also see it off the court, where he's president of the Players Association. He is as active as it gets in the NBA community. He controls every aspect of the organizations that he is associated with. And so that's why when he does his homework, you better believe that Chris Paul is not just saying, oh, I might as well try this, and if it doesn't work out, I'll go somewhere else. No, Chris Paul did his homework months, maybe even years in advance, knowing that at 32 years old, this was his last chance to get it right from an organizational perspective. And he settled on the Rockets, and not just settled on the Rockets when, according to most reports, the biggest competition was the Spurs, widely considered the best organization in the NBA. So I think that should tell you guys just how highly regarded the Rockets are and just how special this culture is here. Of course, James Harden on the floor, but off the court, Mike D'Antoni, Daryl Morey, Tad Brown do a great job from an organization perspective of instilling the type of culture that NBA players want to be a part of. But this meeting, and it's funny, Chris Haynes puts it, you know, he just has to note that Paul was only a Rocket for 4 days, and I guess that surprised Iguodala's representation to hear him speak this strongly. Well, in reality, Chris Paul had been a Rocket mentally for a lot longer than that. He has settled on the Rockets for a very long time, and it's not just because of the roster on the court this season. Now, certainly they want to make the most of it, and I can't tell you 100% that Chris Paul would never leave. If something catastrophic happens, the fact that he's only on a one-year contract, then, yeah, you could never say never. But from a practical standpoint, it's not just about this year. For Chris Paul, it's about having a say. It's about trusting the people that he is aligned with from an executive standpoint within the organization he's at. It is about not just one season, but building the team for the long term. That's why you see Chris Paul in this meeting with Andre Iguodala. Again, James Harden called. He didn't even know the meeting was in process. Now, that's not a shot at James. Most players don't. James is involved in recruitment. Most players are, but they typically aren't on the front line. What happens, players, they'll text, they'll call, they'll work behind the scenes, but they're not actively going to be in that meeting unless it's just a massive thing like that one with Dwight Howard in July of 2013. Most meetings, they're generally going to let the coach, the executives, the GM do their spiel, and you know, if they need to make a call, be it in the meeting or sometime later, they will or they can text. But in terms of the actual presentations, most players around the league aren't that actively involved. It's not like that. The presentations are about an ownership thing. And that's why James Harden, and it's not a shot against James, most players are like that, wasn't even aware of the presentation to Iguodala when it was going on. As opposed to Chris Paul, he was in the room. That's how much of a control freak that Chris Paul is. And in this sense, I think it's very good. Actually, in most senses, I think it's good. I think that's part of what makes Chris Paul a certain Hall of Famer already, even at just 32 years old. But for Chris Paul to basically speak with that level of conviction about the Rockets, he did his homework. That's why he settled on the Rockets. He trusted them inside out. And this is a guy who he's played with two organizations, New Orleans and the Clippers, almost played with the Lakers. This is a guy as president of the union, obviously knows the league inside out. Folks, it's not easy for someone like that to speak with that level of conviction and authority and confidence about their organization. He certainly didn't about the Clippers. And look at his best friend, LeBron James. I would say LeBron James might be the closest thing to Chris Paul from a leadership control perspective in the NBA. LeBron James certainly does not have those types of feelings about Dan Gilbert and the organization in Cleveland right now. So it's not easy to get someone like Chris Paul to say those types of things. So for Chris Paul to do that, that speaks very, very strongly to how confident he is in the Rockets, in his choice in the Rockets. And that's why, as I've said over and over again, this is a long-term decision for him. It's not signed yet, but practically, for all intents and purposes, I think this is done. I think there's already an understanding that he's going to get his max contract after the year. And even if it doesn't work out fully this year, that's always a chance, then it's pretty clear, seeing Chris Paul take this type of ownership already, that he trusts Daryl Morey, Tad Brown, the folks that are in charge of building the Rockets, Gerson Rosas, Mike D'Antoni, that even if things aren't 100% perfect in 2017, 2018, then he can trust them to continue building and improving moving forward. So that was a big part of it to me, was that Chris Paul, you see him take this sort of active role in the Andre Iguodala meeting, then yeah, it speaks to what I think a lot of us have felt for a while, that this is a very long-term decision, Chris Paul going to the Rockets. It's not just about 1 year, even if that's technically what his contract says at the time. Now, going to the rest of the Iguodala story, it says, after Chris Paul, after Paul made his pitch, Iguodala was captivated. The Rockets didn't have cap space, so all that was available was their mid-level exception. They offered him a four-year deal worth $32 million. That's ultimately the deal that went to P.J. Tucker. But Morey, a mastermind maneuvering through the cap, began jotting down right there in the conference table lucrative sign-and-trade scenarios like a mad scientist, sources said. It was understood that this would be the lone route at persuading Iguodala to join the team. This is why, while I think it would have been cool to see Andre Iguodala join the Rockets, and it would have been nice because it would have weakened the Warriors, at the same time, I'm not convinced that it necessarily would make the Rockets a better team than what they have. Because here's the thing about the sign and trade. It would have to make sense for the Warriors. The Warriors aren't going to go out of their way to satisfy the biggest threat to them. You better believe that the Warriors know that Chris Paul and James Harden, a team with two top 10 players, that's the closest team in the entire league to catching on. And I don't see them doing a deal for spare parts. For it to work, and again, the Rockets were not an under-the-cap team, so they would have had to send salaries going out. I feel pretty confident that maybe one of Eric Gordon or Trevor Ariza, one of your higher salary players, may have had to have gone to make it worth the while for the Warriors to do that kind of deal and help a rival. You would have had to help the Warriors in some way. Because, again, the Rockets run under the cap team, so it's not as if they could have just traded a couple of young prospects to the Warriors and absorbed them in the cap space. That would have worked. You would have had to have given something of similar value to the, what, $15 million per year that you'd be taking in. So from a math standpoint, it would have been very difficult. And in terms of a roster standpoint, I don't think you would have weakened the Warriors as much as you think. They would have gotten something from you, and it would have curtailed the rest of your offseason. Now, I guess if you had done a sign-and-trade for Iguodala, in theory, you would not have used your mid-level exception on P.J. Tucker. So I suppose you then could have used that that MLE on someone else to help replace, you know, if you were to lose a Gordon and Ariza, whoever it may be. But that's speculative. The bottom line is we know what has happened since, which is that the Rockets then turned around, got P.J. Tucker, later got Luke Bamute. I'm not going to say those guys are as good as Iguodala, but they do bring you a lot of the same dimensions as Iguodala, who's now on the back half of his career in his low 30s. And you were also able to keep the entire roster around those guys. So I'm not going to say that landing Andre Iguodala would have been a bad thing, but at the same time, I don't see it as an enormous missed opportunity. It would have been cool, but the route that they ended up going instead, which was keeping the entire core, not sending anyone else out in that trade, and then using the mid-level exception and later the minimum on P.J. Tucker and Luke Bamute, two guys of the same position roughly as Iguodala that can do a lot of the same things from a defensive versatility standpoint, I don't think the end result is that bad. Because again, the sign-and-trade scenarios, it sounds easy, but when you look at the actual mechanisms to which a deal would have had to have been done to make it work under the cap, I don't think it would have been nearly as friendly as just, oh, the Rockets getting a Iguodala. Because in addition to all that, again, the Warriors know the Rockets are their main competition. I don't think they're going to bend over to help them for a deal that's basically just sending out a bunch of filler and a bunch of nonsense. No, you'd have to make it worth the Warriors' while as well. So again, I think the Rockets might have pitched having Gordon, Ariza, the full cast around Iguodala if you were going to take the four-year $32 million deal, which was basically the mid-level exception that they ended up giving to P.J. Tucker later on. But to get a sign and trade would have still been done. Yeah, I think the Rockets would have done it because Iguodala is a very good player, and it would have weakened the Warriors. So I think they would have done it, but it would not have been as easy as keeping your entire core. There would have been a hit for the Rockets. And so then you contrast what ended up happening, which is keeping the entire supporting cast together and adding P.J. Tucker and Luke Bamute. I'm not really torn up. I don't think the Rockets would be in that different of a place if the Iguodala thing worked out for a sign and trade versus where they are right now. It's an interesting story, and that's why I'm talking about it, but ultimately, I don't think that decision would have moved the needle all that much in either direction. So that's why I'm not really torn up over, oh, they almost had him, because of course it says at the end that the Rockets left without a commitment, but there's a strong sentiment at the time that he was Houston bound. Final note on the meeting is that Haynes points out the meeting lasted almost 2 hours and was termed as, quote, the best recruiting presentation of all time, according to a source with Iguodala's camp. And then, of course, as we learned on July 1st, Iguodala immediately canceled all the remainder of his meetings. It was basically either the Rockets or going back to the Warriors, and what ultimately ended up happening, of course, the Warriors did cave. They gave him the $16 million a year that he was looking for because they had enough leverage from the Rockets, and Iguodala went back to Golden State, which is what a lot of people expected from the outset. But this anecdote about being the best presentation of all time, folks, that's meaningful. We've heard that over and over again. We heard it when they went after LaMarcus Aldridge in July 2015. We've heard it in a number of other meetings as well. I remember Kent Bazemore, who said no last summer, and thank goodness he did in hindsight, but he went on at length about how wowed he was by the Rockets' pitch. And that stuff matters. As I have said over and over again, it does have value to finish in second place in these types of meetings in the NBA. There are a lot of fans who can't take it. I don't know. They get themselves so emotionally invested, and they can't stand being rejected. And to them, finishing second is the same as finishing 10th. Well, fine. If you want to feel that way, it's not my prerogative to make you feel otherwise. But the reality of the situation is, from an NBA perspective, finishing second is a hell of a lot better than finishing 10th. Because sometimes the stars are going to align. And the fact that the Rockets, you know, for example, went after Nene in previous years. It didn't work out in 2011, but then it ended up working out in 2016. The same with Eric Gordon. The same with Ryan Anderson. There's those previous flirtations. And sometimes it's not even the direct player. Sometimes it's just the agents hearing good things about the Rockets from clients and other players around the league. That stuff matters. When you're trying to get top-line NBA free agents, most of the time they have at least 5 to 10 serious suitors. This is a cutthroat business, and to be the one team out of 30 that lands those guys, it's not very hard. I mean, it's not very easy. The deck is always stacked against you. So you have to understand that the odds are always going to be in favor of you, quote-unquote, losing. However, you losing and finishing second, that means a lot because it tells you that when the circumstances are slightly better, you have a real chance to do something special, as what happened earlier this summer when the Rockets did successfully sell Chris Paul. And of course, that went all the way back during the season, led by James Harden, it seems like. But folks, this recruitment, having that sort of reputation around the league, that matters, because with the bar as high as it is to secure a top NBA free agent, your reputation precedes itself. Your reputation matters. So even if you come up short, when you go out and you have that type of meeting, then it's not just Andre Iguodala that feels that way. His agents are wowed, and every player that heard about it, or even now is reading this Chris Haynes article on ESPN, that's in the back of their mind that, wow, this is a special place. Whatever they're saying, Maury, Tad Brown, Gerson Rosas, Mike D'Antoni, they have developed a special culture, and boy, do they have something really going here in Houston. That stuff matters. Even if you don't win the short-term race, there is something to be said in the NBA for long-term franchise positioning, culture, perception. The Rockets have worked very hard to turn around their culture, especially in the last year plus since that ill-fated 2015-2016 season, the last of Dwight Howard. And if you read this story, boy, has it turned around in a huge, huge way. So kudos to the Rockets. They've done it. And even if they didn't land Andre Iguodala, in my opinion, consider it the latest in a long line of successful free agency ventures in which, even if the Rockets didn't close that particular deal, they went a long way towards establishing themselves at the type of franchise that players like Chris Paul want to play for. By the way, one final note about the Chris Paul portion before I wrap up the podcast. We've heard a lot of folks throughout the summer saying, wow, why won't Carmelo Anthony waive his no trade for Cleveland or Portland or Oklahoma City? All these teams, these are really good teams. Why won't he? Well, folks, I think we all know that Chris Paul is as close to Carmelo as any player in the NBA. Maybe LeBron's the only guy that's comparably close. But, folks, if Chris Paul is telling that to Andre Iguodala, then imagine how much, if not more, Chris Paul would say to Carmelo Anthony, one of his best friends. So you want to know why Carmelo Anthony is so focused on Houston, even though he has plenty of other quality teams that he could conceivably waive his no trade to go to, and the Knicks would get a better package in return? You better believe it's because Chris Paul is telling Carmelo these exact same things and more. That's why Carmelo is so set on Houston. And to use the LeBron example, I'm pretty damn confident that LeBron can't say the same things about Cleveland that Chris Paul is saying about Houston. So bottom line, yes, the Rockets did not land Iguodala. He went back to the Warriors as expected. He got his money. He got paid. But at the end of the day, that process, that courtship, especially now explained by Chris Paynes of ESPN, shed a lot of light about the recruitment process here in Houston and organizationally, how the Rockets have made so many constructive moves, particularly in the last year plus, that led the way to Chris Paul and should certainly lead the way to future successful recruitments as well in this iteration of the Rockets. So on that positive note, I will wrap things up right there. Again, as always, thanks to you guys, my loyal listeners, for listening. If you're not already following me on Twitter, please do at Ben Dubose, or follow the show on Twitter at Lockdown Rockets. Also, email us, lockdownrockets@gmail.com. Questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, or subscribe to us if you haven't already. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Audio Boom. Pretty much wherever you search for your podcast, search for Lockdown Rockets, subscribe to us, leave us a good rating. That's what allows us to come to you as frequently as we do. As far as the rest of the week, it does seem like that there's starting to be a slow trickle of Carmelo Anthony news. That's good. That's as expected. Media Day is at the beginning of next week. Training camp starts on Tuesday. So will the Knicks blink? My contention all along is that they probably would, and we're starting to see signs of that. According to Frank Isola, New York Daily News, Carmelo's camp is cautiously optimistic that he'll be traded to Houston before Monday. We've had a few, unsourced Twitter anonymous folks that are hearing things. We haven't yet had the big breakthrough from someone like Woj, but we are hearing a slow trickle of news picking up. So at the time, again, I don't think it's there yet, but I am optimistic that hopefully in the days ahead, we'll have more to talk about. So for now, I'll sign off, and well, stay tuned, because hopefully we'll have a lot more to talk about maybe even as soon as tomorrow, but certainly by this weekend, I would think, as both the Knicks and Rockets run into the first real deadline of the Carmelo trade negotiations with Media Day and the opening of training camp at the beginning of next week. For now, enjoy your week, and we'll be talking again very soon.